Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, pontificate, just shut up. Why won't you listen? Why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Welcome, everybody. This is not the lovely Karen Cataline. It's Martina Cartwright, your doctor or professor of common sense, sitting in for Karen, who's out doing another show right now, and then she plans on enjoying that warm Florida sunshine. So I'm coming to you live from the beautiful state of Indiana, where it's about 14 degrees and snowing. But we had a wonderful visit with Vice President Pence yesterday, so I hope everybody had a glorious and wonderful Christmas, if you celebrate Christmas, and a happy Hanukkah to those that celebrate Hanukkah. Boy, has there been a lot in the news lately. So today we're going to talk a little bit about my favorite Christmas present that I received, which is that tax bill that went through thanks to President Trump. So we'll talk a little bit about that and what it means for us that have Obamacare policies, and then we'll move on to travel. And as many of you know who have listened to the show before, I have a background in biochemistry, and I work as a biotechnology consultant where I travel throughout the country setting up clinical studies for a number of drug companies. So I'm in the airport every single week. And boy, within the last 6 weeks, have I seen some interesting changes, especially with the TSA. So we'll talk a little bit about travel. And then we'll finish up in the last half hour of the show talking a little bit about resolution regulation. Yes, it's that time of year when New Year's resolutions come to pass. We only have another week left in 2017, and then 2018 starts next year, next week. So I'm looking forward to that, and Karen will be back for her regular show next week, so don't miss it. So that gives you a little idea of what we'll talk about today, and then if we have time towards the end of the show, we'll talk a little bit about some of the celebrities that we've lost this past year and how they made an impact on our culture. And of particular note and interest was the death of Don Rickles. And I had the pleasure of seeing Don Rickles live and in person when I lived in Las Vegas, Nevada. So we'll get started with my favorite gift, that tax bill that went through. How about that, everybody? President Trump said he'd get it done, and it was touch and go there for a while, but Congress finally got their act together. And it was very encouraging. And in fact, I would have to say that Donald J. Trump has made a huge impact on our economy. Retail sales numbers just came out this morning showing a 4.9% increase in sales within the last few weeks here from November 1st until Christmas Eve. So 4.9%, and that's your brick and mortar stores. That was double digit increases in sales as far as websites go within the last few weeks as well. So that's very encouraging. And I think a lot of that has to do with this tax bill that was passed. So if we take a closer look at that tax bill, most people are getting a significant break, particularly if they are middle class, as many of us are. And that'll be something that we can put in our pockets, literally. One of the other things that was included in that tax bill is that they are getting rid of the Obamacare mandate. And hopefully that is the first nail in the coffin to get that horrendous bill done and finished. And we can only hope. For those of us that are on Obamacare policies or expect to get them on here pretty soon, as far as policies goes, it's great that that is going away, and hopefully we can go back to selecting our own policy in the free market. So it's also expected to bring about $400 billion back to the United States from companies that are now overseas. So we'll repatriate some of that money and really give the economy the shot in the arm that it needs. So I'm coming to you again from Indiana, and today is what I like to call Return Day, December 26th. So people are returning stuff. And a lot of things are returning back to normal. So if any of you have been listening to the radio, you're probably sick of the 24 hours a day, 7 days a week Christmas carols. And a lot of people have been returning home today, or at least trying to. There have been a few weather problems lately, but this is one of the busiest days in American airports. So I want to spend a little bit of time about travel, airport experiences, and one of my hopeful goals that happens for 2018 is that the TSA, if we need them, becomes privatized. So what about travel? Many of you may have seen in the newspaper within the last 2 days that representative from Texas, Sheila Jackson Lee, took a teacher's first class seat on United Airlines. So the way the story is told, a teacher had purchased a ticket with miles on United Airlines to fly from Texas or Washington or vice versa. It's still unclear as far as the story goes, but she did have a seat. She was given a first class ticket, this teacher was. She gets ready to board the plane. They scan her ticket and they say, "Well, I'm sorry, madam. You don't have a reservation. You don't have a seat and you don't have a ticket." So she said, "Well, what in the world happened? I did not cancel my reservation. What's going on?" So she goes up to the gate agent. They take a look and they look in United.com where they see her ticket had been canceled. She had nothing to do with that. So somehow the teacher is able to get on the plane and she sees who's sitting in her seat. And it's none other than Sheila Jackson Lee. And she said, "That's my seat. I'm supposed to be sitting there." United offered her $300 at the gate and told her to take a new airline if she wanted to get home. Well, that didn't sit very well with the teacher. And she ended up going to the press and reporting this story, which has been a big blow up. And now United has offered her $500, which might get you one seat one way somewhere on United. And Sheila Jackson Lee denied any kind of special treatment. So there you have it. The lovely Democrat Party, the party of the people, and they take somebody else's seat at Christmas time. So returning again to travel, I want to speak a little bit about that debacle in Atlanta. Many of you may recall a couple of weeks ago where the power went out in Atlanta's airport. And that was pretty significant. That has never happened before. Apparently, there was a fire where the electrical box was, along with the backup generator and whatever else they had. That fire caused a power outage throughout the Atlanta Hartsfield Airport. And if any of you have ever been there, that airport is massive. In fact, it's 2.5 miles from where they drop you off in front to the very last gate, 2.5 miles. And there's a train system that runs through each separate terminal. All of that was shut down. And because the jetways are run by electricity, those were also shut down. So people could not deplane. They were stuck on the airplanes. The waiting areas were dark. Again, the train system wasn't working. And forget about it if you were in the ticketing area. All of that was dark as well. No electricity. So this happened over an 11-hour period where people were stranded. And frankly, in my opinion, sitting ducks, sitting there in the airport, waiting for the electricity to come on. And when they were asking individuals who worked there about assistance or if there was a backup plan or what to do, nobody had any answers. So I have to say, if one were a terrorist meaning to do harm, this would be an opportunity for them to do harm. Simply shut out the electrical grid at a very large airport. So in talking to some of my friends that are very familiar with terrorism and how soft targets are simply soft targets, the worst place to be at an airport, in their opinion, is out there in the area where one gets their ticket that is close to an active street, because anybody could just drive up into that area armed to the teeth and cause a lot of damage. If you're back in the waiting area, it's a little bit less of a risk. And certainly if you're on a plane, that is actually the most uncomfortable, but the lowest risk area of an airport that does not have electricity. But that was a huge debacle. And what was out of the press probably about a year and a half ago was that Dallas-Fort Worth Airport experienced something similar. The DFW airport went down electrically for a few hours. And the only reason why I know this is I had a colleague that was flying home from a business trip and they could not land because DFW, just that grid alone, was shut down. So this really is a serious target, and I will hope the powers that be pay a little bit more attention to not only the electrical grid as a whole, but also the electrical grids that govern some of our major airports throughout the United States. Speaking of which, how many of you out there have traveled recently? If you have a good travel story, we'd love to hear it. And you can always call in on our toll-free line, which is 888-627-6008, to tell me about your travel story. But as I said, I travel every single week, mostly through Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport. And so the other day, I'm standing in the TSA pre-check line. I get through the line, and the little buzzer goes off. And it doesn't mean that I've won a jackpot. No, it means I've been selected for extra security. Now, I've been flying again just about every week for the last 5 years. So I get pulled out of line for extra security. And this is the 15th out of 18th flight that I've been pulled out of line for this random security check. So I'm standing there waiting. And I see a woman get pushed through the security gate where the TSA agents are standing. She's in a wheelchair. And the wheelchair attendant takes off to go get another passenger. He disappears. So the woman is waiting on the other side of security, waiting for her bags to come through X-ray. She gets her bags, and it turns out she has a sharp item in her bag as well as water. And she's arguing with the TSA agent, saying water is not a liquid. And they get into a big distracting discussion, and it stops the whole line. So while they're bickering back and forth, they're asking, where is the TSA agent that brought the wheelchair person through security? They can't find him. And I'm standing there waiting to be double searched while my bags are sitting out there unattended and barely in my sight. So I'm watching all of this go on, and there's hardly any people in line, which is a good thing, but the line starts to back up. And so the TSA agent says to the passengers that are waiting to get double searched, has anybody seen the wheelchair attendant? And I'm standing there flabbergasted. I said, yes, I have seen the wheelchair attendant. He went back through security to get another passenger and left this individual there who's arguing about, is water a liquid, and the sharp item in her bag. So 20 minutes later, after all of that is cleared and we get through there, I continue down to the gate. I sit in the waiting area. And what do I see? Two abandoned bags. So they've been sitting there for about 20 minutes. And you know the rule. If the bag is abandoned, it should be called in. So finally, I report it to the gate agent. There are two abandoned bags. Somebody gets there. Police officer checks them out, takes them out of there. So we get on board the plane. And again, I'm sitting there. I board early because I fly so often, and I'm sitting towards the front, probably in the third row. This is Southwest Airlines, which I love, by the way. But I'm watching people as they board the plane. And you know, they always make that announcement on the plane that says, do not stand or form a line in the forward galley to wait for the restroom. You have to wait your turn. Wait back at your seat because they don't want anybody breaking into the cockpit. Yet as people are boarding the plane, they're wanting to use the front lav, and the pilot door is wide open. The cockpit is wide open. And I'm thinking, does anybody see this? Does anybody else see that the door is wide open, that anybody could walk in there and take over that plane at that moment in time? So for as much as the TSA has, quote, been doing to try and maintain safety within our airports, there are still some areas that certainly need improvement. And if they're not having personal conversations as you're walking through the security line, then they're really not paying attention. And I found this to be a consistency in every airport except for one, and I'm not going to name that airport, but they do have private TSA agents who are not having personal conversations, who are much more attentive to the bags, and it's the only airport in the country that has privatized TSA agents. So I think with a little bit of free market action here, we might be able to get that TSA whipped into shape. However, the TSA can be quite entertaining. If you ask a TSA agent, what is the weirdest thing you've seen somebody try to get through in their carry-on bag, they will usually tell you. And so I asked the Indianapolis TSA agent that was monitoring the x-ray, what is the weirdest thing somebody has tried to get through in their carry-on bag? And you'll love this. The answer was a frozen deer head, as in D-E-E-R. And I said, a frozen deer head. So how did that work? I just have this visualized in my mind. It's going to be a hunter or somebody else. Well, a foreign visitor to the United States apparently had shot a deer and wanted to take the head home, antlers, eyeballs, and all, froze the specimen, put it in a box, and expected it to get it home to Asia. So he puts it in this box, puts it on the conveyor belt, it goes through x-ray, it gets flagged by the agent, and they're thinking, why are there antlers sticking out of this box? And they open it up, and it is, in fact, a frozen deer head. It had not been embalmed. It was just a deer head that had been stuck in a freezer, and it was starting to thaw, of course, and there was no way that it was going to be able to make it back to Asia in that condition, nor should it ever been that far anyway. It should have never gotten that far anyway. But they ended up confiscating said deer head and checking it and putting it in the lower compartment of the plane. So I'm sure the deer head got to where it needed to be and everybody was happy. But that is the weirdest thing I have heard that has gotten through or almost gotten through as checked baggage. So speaking of travel, you know, one of the things that people are fearful of when they travel, other than Sheila Jackson Lee taking their seats on a plane, are germs. And I used to be heavily involved in infectious diseases. So the germiest place on the plane is not the recirculated air that comes through. It's actually your tray table. Everybody touches the tray table, and it's only cleaned once a day in the evening. The bathrooms are clean, but the tray tables and your seat handles are not cleaned. So if you're trying to avoid getting a cold or the flu this year when you're traveling, take some of those handy dandy wipes with you and wipe down that tray table as well as the seat handles, because those are the germiest places. Viruses can live on those surfaces for 24 hours or more, and that's primarily how germs are spread, other than through the standard coughing and sneezing and so forth. So wipe down those surfaces. And the CDC has been encouraging people who travel to get a flu shot this year. I, for one, have not gotten my flu shot. And I, again, have worked in infectious diseases for years. And one of the reasons why I've chosen not to do that is because the flu shot has to be developed a year in advance. So they don't know which strain of virus is going to be there. They're guessing. And so this year's vaccine may be somewhat effective, but not completely effective against the primary flu bug that's out there. And so far, over 30 states have had a flu bug outbreak. So if you are an older adult, or if you have young children at home and you are flying in the airport, or even if it's a private airport or any airport, make sure that you have adequate coverage with a mask and you're cleaning up the germs off the tray tables, because that is the primary place for germs. So again, with travel this year, there's been a lot in the news about that. And speaking of germs, we're going to move on a little bit to what's been going on in North Korea and how this relates to travel. There have been some threats against certain airports from ISIS, but North Korea is also doing some saber rattling. And even though the Pope has prayed for peace and doesn't really like the fact that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, life goes on. And Korea has posed a very real threat. In fact, the New York Post has just reported in today's issue that the North Korean soldier that defected a few weeks ago, came over to South Korea and passed away, had antibodies to anthrax. So what exactly does that mean? It means that somehow, some way, he was exposed to the deadly bacteria. And it probably means that North Korea has intentions to weaponize anthrax. So the man in question, the defected soldier, was either exposed to or vaccinated for anthrax and developed an immunity to it. The intent for anthrax to spread, it is spread through the air. Airports are a perfect target for that. And it's somewhat disconcerting to know that they've actually tested positive in one of these North Korean soldiers. It appears that they did four soldiers defected, but only one had antibodies in his system to the deadly bacteria. So this discovery is obviously causing concern in Seoul, because the disease can kill at least 60% of those who are exposed to it within the first 24 hours. So unless antibiotics or a vaccination is available, those individuals who are exposed will likely die from it. And so it's very easily spread in close quarters. And so what they're thinking is that North Korea seems to be have been developing biological weapons for some time, since probably about 2015, and that they've been publicizing the works of some of the Biological Technology Research Institute in North Korea as part of some of their propaganda. So it's out there as far as some of the research stories go, and it's certainly of a concern. Now, this isn't to say that we're at risk if we travel normally or in any airport. It's just that we have to be a little bit more aware about our surroundings in the airport, looking up from our cell phones, our newspapers, our magazines, and our books, and paying attention to the surrounding at hand. As I mentioned previously, I saw two bags unattended for more than 20 minutes, and they had not been reported. And this is in a very large airport. So if you are in an airport, be aware of your surroundings, know where you are, and if something looks suspicious, report it. It's extremely important, particularly in this day and age where we not only have to be concerned about ISIS terrorism, but also our friends in North Korea and perhaps even Russia. So travel is certainly not what it used to be. It's a germy, inconvenient, uncomfortable, and potentially disastrous situation for travel. I don't know why I do this for a living, but it certainly beats working in a cubicle. So with respect to travel, again, if you are out on the roads today, again, be very careful. Overregulated nation, there will be checkpoints out during New Year's Eve as well as New Year's Day to check for drunk drivers, but also any driver. And there have been real issues in states with police officers pulling over all cars instead of just those who are suspected of drunken driving, all in the name of safety. So again, this can also inconvenience travel. But there's a real question with respect to liberty as to, is it constitutional for every single driver on the road to be pulled over simply because they are at a particular checkpoint? So that controversy has existed not only in Arizona, but also my home state of Indiana and throughout the Midwest, with individuals suing governments or questioning governments on pulling over every car for drunken driving and having them do the breathalyzer test. So again, if you're traveling out on the highways, be mindful of the snow if it's in your area, but also be aware of those checkpoints and cooperate with the police officers. But really ask your local politicians, you know, is it constitutional to pull over every single individual who's driving? Or should it only be those that are suspected of driving under the influence? So with respect to travel, again, we've covered quite a few issues with that, and I'm going to move a little bit to taxes. And the latest numbers, again, show that retail sales are up. But one of the questions about the tax bill is, will people be traveling from states like New York, Illinois, and California to lower tax states and turning generally Republican states into Democrat states? You know, this could backfire very quickly, such that individuals in New York, for example, will start moving to Florida, which has become somewhat of a purple state in recent years, and start voting more Democratic because they don't like the tax structure in their own state. So they'll move down to Florida that has no state income tax and perhaps change the voting culture there. I will tell you, living out west, we've had several individuals from California move from California into states like Nevada that does not have a sales tax, or excuse me, a state tax, state income tax, or to move to Arizona because California is so highly taxed. They raise their gas tax significantly. So a gallon of gas approaches $4. But individuals who make over $40,000 a year, each dollar of their taxes is taxed over 13%. They have one of the highest state tax rates in the nation. So a lot of folks are simply being taxed out of the market. So depending on how this bill plays as far as what's available to individuals or married couples who file, as far as some of the deductions go and if they can take off some of their state taxes and so forth, is something that we'll need to have a few more details about. But it really is concerning that many of these individuals from highly Democratic states will start moving to some of the more Republican states and changing that voter base. So I don't know about you, but I'm a little bit worried about that. We saw it happen in Nevada. We're seeing that a little bit in Arizona. We're certainly seeing that in Florida. So travel from one state to another is great for vacation, but I'm not sure if I want some of these residents that are from New York to become permanent residents of the great state of Florida. And speaking of which, of the taxes, again, I think people are very encouraged that President Trump was able to get that through before the end of the year. I had my concerns about our Senators McCain and Flake, but they ended up coming through at the last minute. And I know the bill is not perfect, but certainly it will put more money in the pockets of most individuals, and with more spending money, that will drive the economy. And hopefully more people will be out and about traveling, spending money, and encouraging more businesses to come back to the United States. I, for one, own my own business, and I was thrilled that this occurred because I will certainly see some relief in taxes. I may be able to hire more individuals, and it certainly eased up on certain regulations. And in fact, to set this up for the next half hour, we're going to talk a little bit about Regulation Nation and how the government may be trying to regulate our New Year's resolutions. So next week will be January 1st. A lot of people like to start the year off fresh and clean with New Year's resolutions. And the three most popular New Year's resolutions are, of course, weight loss, get more exercise, improve health. Those are the top three. Some people may want to change jobs, have better relationships with their family, but by and large, it has to do with losing weight, increasing that exercise, and moving on. So when we come back here in a moment, after our break at the bottom of the hour, I'll talk a little bit about how long it takes to change a habit, how long it takes for somebody to lose weight, and how the government is trying to regulate from both local, city, state governments, your resolutions, but also from a national level, how those resolutions may be regulated in the form of portion control, affecting your diet, affecting your food choices, and the new menus that restaurants will be required to use next year in 2018 that's costing them a small fortune, particularly if they are a small restaurant. But the next time you all go into a pizza place or any kind of fast food joint, you're going to see the calorie counts posted on the menus. That is a new federal regulation. It's starting early in New York and in New York State. What a surprise. So again, we'll be taking a break here. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about overregulation in the nation and how that has a direct impact on you, the consumer, and you, the United States citizen. So we'll be right back after this quick break.
Hi, I'm Hadley, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arnn, on the great principle of equality set forth by the Declaration of Independence.
The great Abraham Lincoln described the Constitution as a picture or frame of silver, built to guard or protect an apple of gold. This apple of gold was the Declaration of Independence and its principle of equal rights for all. This principle of equal rights, Lincoln said, clears the path for all, gives hope to all, and by consequence, enterprise and industry to all. There are many today who seek to limit or distort this great principle by employing a distorted definition of equality, an equality of condition or outcome, regardless how people live their lives. This distortion, if generally accepted, will lead to an America less prosperous and less free.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Martina Cartwright sitting in for Karen Cataline, who's out doing another show and then going to enjoy the beautiful Florida weather. So happy to sit in here for her. And this just came off breaking from the New York Post regarding Sheila Jackson Lee, who was accused by a United Airlines passenger of bumping her from a first class seat, said in a Twitter rampage on Tuesday that she believes the incident is all about race. Yes, Sheila Jackson Lee said, quote, "Since this was not the fault of mine, the way the individual continued to act appeared to be, upon reflection, because I was an African-American woman, seemingly an easy target, along with the African-American flight attendant, who was very, very nice. And this saddens her greatly." Well, if you were bumped out of your seat for no reason on United Airlines, especially around Christmas time, I would be a little irritated myself, and it has nothing to do with race. And do we see a common denominator here? United Airlines, again, aren't they the airline that took the passenger off and caused him bodily harm a few months ago? So something to think about. But there you have it, folks. Sheila Jackson Lee breaking on New York Post regarding her Twitter account and the passenger being bumped was all about race. Well, there you have it. So next week, we begin a new year, 2018. And you may be one of the 75% of Americans who makes New Year's resolutions. And the three top resolutions are weight loss, getting more exercise, and overall better health. So if you intend to do any one of those things, I'm here to give you some tips, some scientific tips on what works and what doesn't. Again, this is Dr. Martina Cartwright sitting in for Karen Cataline. I am your professor of common sense, and I have a background in biochemistry, so I can tell you how things work. And one of those things is weight management for weight loss. But the government may be interfering with your success. So let's talk a little bit about that. Number one thing again, weight management. Believe it or not, according to studies, it takes 21 days, 21 consecutive days to change a habit. So let's say you want to eat fewer sweets. It will take you 21 days of eating fewer sweets every one of those days to get that to become a habit. People who lose weight tend to be very self-motivated. In other words, they're losing weight for themselves, not because their boyfriend or their girlfriend wants them to lose weight or because they have a health problem. It's because they truly want to manage their own weight and not have a doctor or somebody else tell them to do it. So 21 days to change a habit, be self-motivated. The other things include making small changes. I don't know how many times we would see a client come into our dietitian's office and say, I'm going to remove all fat, all sugar from my diet, and I'm going to lose weight. And that lasts for about 5 days, and then they're done with it. So drastic changes do not work. Removing triggers is one way to improve habits. So in other words, if you recognize that you always eat after you have a fight with your mother, you always go for the chocolate cake or the cookies, remove that trigger from the household. So removing triggers is a key to not only remove a bad habit, but if you want to start a good habit, such as exercising, buy a new pair of walking or running shoes and keep them by your bed. So that could be your positive trigger. You slip those on your feet and it's a trigger for you to go out and exercise. The other factor that's very important for weight management is being less sedentary. So getting up off your rear and walking around. And to that end is watching less TV. And that's one of the great things about radio is that you can take the radio or your podcast with you anywhere. So we here at Spouting Off are trying to help you meet your New Year's resolution of getting more exercise because you can listen to us while you're exercising instead of watching TV. Now, how, you may ask, is the government trying to regulate your resolutions? Well, we'll start in New York, where all weird things come. Well, besides California. Soda taxes. They keep revisiting this idea of soda tax. So that means taxing sweet beverages such as sodas, whatever they deem to be unhealthy, in an effort to reduce obesity. Many of the studies that have been released looking at the impact of soda taxes on obesity have not shown that there's a direct impact. You may see some on the left-leaning press saying, well, if you tax it more like cigarettes, they're going to drink less. Well, no, they'll just switch to something else, or they'll buy twice as many of the smaller beverages if they're trying to control portion size, like Bloomberg did in New York. So it really doesn't work to regulate people's dietary habits. And nowhere did we see that more apparent than when Michelle Obama tried to add more vegetables into the school lunch program and they ended up in the compost pile or in the garbage because children would not eat them. So as much as we'd like to help other people, if they are not motivated to lose weight, you cannot legislate good health through soda taxes or even portion control. But this relates to economics as well. This year, in certain restaurants and institutions, there will be a mandate, unless it's delayed or reversed again, that all menus in restaurants must post accurate calorie counts for their foods. Now, this may sound like an easy task, but think about a pizza place where you have thousands, literally thousands of different combinations of pizzas that you can come up with. And so the burden is on the restaurant to try and come up with calorie counts for all those different pizza types. It's an impossible task. So the restaurants have really been pushing back about that. So ask yourself this question. When you go to a restaurant and you see the calorie count, does it make an impact on your selection? Or is it merely just a piece of information that you ignore? For some of you, you may consider calorie counts if you have a nutrition-sensitive disease like diabetes or heart disease or something of that nature. But for most of us, we really don't pay any attention to those calorie counts at all. They're just extra information. So as far as the government over-regulating some of our healthy choices, there are a few examples. But visiting here in Indiana, we have a small Amish community up north. And recently, the FDA raided one of the Amish farms. I'm not kidding you. They raided the farm early in the morning, pounding on the door. And you may say, Amish farm? What could they possibly raid an Amish farm for? They were selling unpasteurized milk, and the FDA didn't like it. This has also occurred in places like Maryland and Pennsylvania, where they have small communities, small farming communities that are selling unpasteurized milk, particularly if it goes across state lines. And the government doesn't like that because they deem that to be a foodborne illness risk. So again, government overreaching. We used to be able to make these decisions on our own. In other words, if I want to go out and milk the cow and have some unpasteurized milk, I should be able to do that. Government isn't great about that, but they really don't want them to sell it over state lines. So again, regulating some of our food choices that we might deem either healthier or within our best interest. This is also the time of year when we will be bombarded on television with the Nutrisystem and other diet ads. And if you go to the gym, you'll find it's going to be nearly impossible to get a parking space within the month of January because there are so many people wanting to lose weight but also increase their exercise. But never fear, by Valentine's Day, nearly a third of individuals who made the New Year's resolution of exercising more will have quit. And by St. Patrick's Day in March, over 50% of individuals who made the resolution to exercise more will just throw that out the window. So you won't see them at the gym anymore. But it certainly makes life miserable for those of us that go on a regular basis. And don't you folks just love those people that drive around the parking lot looking for that parking space closest to the front door of the gym, and then you see them inside walking on a treadmill? So there's always going to be those folks with respect to New Year's resolutions that will end up in the gym parking lot. So again, if you're one of those individuals that wants to lose weight, exercise more, remember, 21 days to change a habit. You should be self-motivated, cut down on the TV time, remove any triggers from your house, such as the cookies, the cakes, the pies, and so forth. Give yourself a positive trigger to help you remember to exercise and move around a little bit more, and make slow, incremental changes. And as far as the government goes, hey, soda can be part of any healthy diet. It just has to do with portion control and a little bit of personal responsibility. And with the calorie counts, we get into dangerous territory there. So I don't know how helpful that information is, but certainly it's up to the individual to make those changes in their diet, not up to the government to assist them. So in the last few minutes of the show, I want to do a recap of 2017 and some of the individuals we lost in 2017 and the impact they had on government as well as some of our cultural aspects. So you may be wondering who those individuals might be. We lost quite a few celebrities. We lost Fats Domino, Della Reese, Hugh Hefner, Malcolm Young from AC/DC, the band from Australia. We lost John Hurd. If any of you have watched Home Alone within the last few days before Christmas, he played the dad on Home Alone. He passed away this last year. We lost Adam West, one of my favorite voice actors. He was great in the original 1960s Batman and Robin, but he also was the voice to Mayor West on Family Guy. Quite an accomplished individual. We also lost Glenn Campbell, who had a wonderful variety show out in back in the 1970s. And one of my all-time favorite individuals that I had the pleasure of seeing live in Las Vegas, Don Rickles. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of these individuals. Oh, Mary Tyler Moore is also on the list, Tom Petty, David Cassidy, and Chuck Berry. So quite a few famous celebrities. And one that's a little bit odd, many of you have seen Ghostbusters 2. Sometimes they show that around Christmas, that movie. The little boy that played one of the babies, they were twins. His name was Hank Dischendorf. He passed away, and he was only in his 20s. I think he was 29. So Don Rickles, talk about the death of an era. He was one of the most politically incorrect comics we've ever had. And with his death goes with it the political incorrectness and the humor that he showed. It did not matter who you were or what you did. He was truly the king of insults. And he did it in such a good nature. He brought levity to very tense situations. But he also brought a lot of fun to some of the roasts that they had. So whether he was roasting former President Ronald Reagan or any movie star, John Wayne, for example, he had some one-line zingers that were hilarious. But if you ever saw a show in person or if you ever saw him interviewed, one of his favorite stories that he liked to tell was that he was out to dinner with Frank Sinatra. And Frank had a notorious bad, bad temper. And one of the things that Frank liked to do is every time he had a steak, he'd like to have some ketchup. He would dip it in ketchup. So Don Rickles and Frank Sinatra and a few others in the Las Vegas pack went out to dinner at this restaurant that was all white. The tablecloths were white. The seats were white. The walls were all white. Looked like just snow everywhere. Everything was white. So Frank asked for some ketchup to go with his steak. Waiter brings out the ketchup, and Frank turns the bottle over, and it's not coming out. So he keeps pounding the bottom. Frank Sinatra's pounding the bottom of this ketchup bottle. He keeps pounding it for the ketchup to come out, and it's not coming out. And he gets so frustrated that Frank Sinatra picked up that ketchup bottle and slammed it against that snow-white wall, and it splattered everywhere. And Don Rickles looked right at him, and he said, "Frank, do you need some ketchup?" And that just broke up the whole tension and got everybody laughing. And that was Don Rickles. His best friend was Bob Newhart, that many of you know from the Bob Newhart Show. Don was married for a long time to his wife. By all accounts, he was a very kind and wonderful man, and he certainly will be missed because it represents the death of that era where we had individuals that could laugh and make fun of things, and nobody got uptight and said it was race, it was gender, it was whatever. He was just Don, and he brought a lot of happiness to those who remember him and who saw him. The other two I want to visit, and I really want to give some food for thought about this, because we always bring in a little bit of cultural sensitivity to the show, as well as a little bit of science. So we'll start with Glen Campbell, who was an amazing country artist, particularly back in the 70s. He had a series of hits, including Rhinestone Cowboy, and he was a resident of Phoenix, Arizona for some time. He and David Cassidy was another very well-known entertainer in the early 70s, but both of those individuals had severe alcohol and drug problems, particularly alcohol issues throughout their lives. Both died with dementia. In fact, Glen Campbell died of complications related to Alzheimer's disease, and David Cassidy died of complications from dementia. But to show you what a talent Glen Campbell was back in the day when he could really play that guitar, he was so talented that world-renowned guitarist Eddie Van Halen of the group Van Halen asked for a guitar lesson from Glen Campbell. So I would say if anything we have to learn from those individuals is alcohol can damage the brain. And if you have an addiction like that, please get some help because it destroyed two wonderful talents. Well, three if you include Malcolm Young from AC/DC, who also died from complications associated with dementia. The other person I want to mention is Mary Tyler Moore. Many of us remember her from the Dick Van Dyke Show as Laura Petrie, and she was your quintessential 1950s, 1960s housewife, taking care of her husband and child. And then she moved on in the 1970s to the Mary Tyler Moore Show, where she was a single working woman in a newsroom. And that really did represent an important cultural change, that she was a working woman in with a bunch of guys in a primarily male-dominated culture. But what was interesting about that show is that those guys could make remarks, and she didn't cry sexual harassment. It was, yes, they were, she was working with them together as a team. She would defend herself if she thought something was sexist or unfair. She never considered herself a victim. And that's one of the things that I liked about the Mary Tyler Moore Show of the 1970s, is that she was a young, independent, single woman who dated men, enjoyed herself, worked in a predominantly male workplace, and represented the woman that many of us wanted to be when we were growing up in that era, as somebody who didn't take a lot of stuff, but continued to hold her head high, and she didn't make a big deal out of everything. Again, look at how much we've changed in the last few years as a culture, where things that used to be stuff that would roll off our shoulders end up being a slight. So somebody has to say, well, it's racist, or it's sexist, or it's homophobic, or it's Islamophobic, or whatever. And just the sheer amount of duplicity, as well as double standards. We've really gotten away from the heart of our culture here in the United States. And I think many of these individuals who were on television represented some significant cultural changes. In the last few minutes, the only others I will talk about would include Jim Nabors. We remember him from the Andy Griffith Show, as well as Gomer Pyle. And he was your quintessential Southern guy, what everybody thought of the South, of some sort of rube who was just a silly, stupid guy from the South. And that's who he was. But that isn't who he was at all. Jim Nabors was a very talented singer. He was a very generous man. And we found out later in his life that he was a homosexual. He married his partner. They were together for 38 years. And he was an amazing talent who would always sing Back Home Again in Indiana at the Indianapolis 500. And I think what Jim Nabors taught us about culture is that, yes, they made fun of him because he was from the South. They thought he was a stupid guy, but he let that roll off his shoulders. He never took it personally because he knew that he was an intelligent man of great talent. And again, America has forgotten in some cases that we have a sense of humor, that we know the true value of individuals, that there are stereotypes out there from everyone, for every different culture, but that doesn't mean that because you tease somebody, you make fun of them, or they feel uncomfortable or whatever, that you're automatically homophobic or any of those things. Certainly it wasn't the case with Jim Nabors. He was well respected by all, and just an amazing talent that will be missed. And again, on that list, we had Chuck Berry, another amazing talent, guitarist from the 1950s. Tom Petty. We haven't heard a lot about what happened to Tom Petty, but he died at 66 years of age just a few weeks ago, and he's another that will be missed as well. So we've lost a lot of great people. 2017 has been a year to remember. I hope it'll be a pleasant year for all of you to remember out in our listening audience. And I hope that you will tune in next week when Karen returns next year, I should say, as well as next week with a brand new show that you'll all enjoy. But this has been Dr. Martina Cartwright, your common sense professor, sitting in for Karen Cataline, who again will be back next week or next year. And for all of us here, we wish you a very happy and blessed 2018. This has been Spouting Off on your BBS Station 1 radio network. Thank you again for listening. Have a great day.